welcome to Wednesday's Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Coming up in the second half of today's show, it's Prairie Plates with Rick Guillon. Rick hosts Mike Freilich, founder, co-owner, and head of brewery operations at Laughing Sun Brewing in Bismarck. They recently won the 2025 Downtown Bismarck Burger Slam, and we'll figure out all of Mike's secrets and what he has in store for this spring and summer. The man that we look forward to visiting with each and every month here on Main Street, Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein, joins me with the segment we call Philosophical Currents, where we explore the deeper questions that shape our world. Jack's a Chester Fritz Distinguished Professor of Philosophy and Ethics at the University of North Dakota. Jack, welcome back to Main Street.
Oh, I'm always happy to be here. It's great to talk to you.
You are at work. I am at work. And that's what we're going to talk about today. The value of labor, what it means to earn a living, and what is the nature of work, Jack? And as we begin our conversation, it strikes me that North Dakota has a strong tradition of agriculture, energy, manufacturing jobs. Do these industries shape our region's perspective of the meaning of work?
Oh, I think they absolutely do. You know, there's a world of difference between a job and a career, and there's a world of difference between a career and a lifestyle. And if you are an agricultural worker, if you're on the family farm, if you're in a small town where everyone works in the same plant, it's going to have a very different effect than if you're in a city and everyone works retail and everyone has a different job. Plus, the idea of work that doesn't have a regular 9-to-5 schedule, that you have to wake up early, that you give part of yourself to. This is a region in which people very much identify as what they do, because what they do is often been in the family for generations or makes them part of the community in a very special way.
Many of our listeners also work in family-owned small business. And I guess I'm wondering, the basic question that I want to get to today, is work essential for us as humans? Is it part of human dignity, or can meaning be found outside of traditional labor as we live our lives each and every day? Do I work to live, or do I live to work?
Well, all human beings need something to do. And that something can be work or care for the family or a wide variety of hobbies or things like that. We need a task, and we need a task to help us find meaning. It is very American to identify yourself as an employee of a particular place. If you go abroad and you ask people what they do, they will tell you their hobbies. They will talk about their family. It's really a very American trait to say, what do you do? Oh, I work in an office, or I'm an office manager, or I'm a farmer, or something like that. And so it is the capitalism that we're all raised in that connects our identity with work in a very special way. But that doesn't change the fact that all human beings need something to occupy themselves with and need something external to provide some sort of meaning in their lives. Day-to-day life is overwhelming. It's repetitious. There are, you know, we all have that experience of being on vacation or something where we don't know what day it is. And that can be oppressive in its own way. And so human beings throughout history have sought endeavors to find a way to value themselves, to compare themselves with others, and to impart meaning in their daily activities.
I am thinking about retirement. It's that part of my life where that has come into my conversation with family and with friends. And I wonder about all of this. I hear stories about people who retired that love their retirement. I hear stories of people who retired and literally passed away because they had nothing to do, or at least that was the thinking. My life, I think, will change if I'm not working, if I don't have something to do where people need to depend on me to get a job done. I'm worried about that.
I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of folks who've retired, and there is a real difference in those who have a plan and those who do not. And those who do not get often get depressed, they feel overwhelmed, they feel meaningless, and they end up spending a lot of time in front of the television. And I don't know, I want to say definitively die quicker, but it often seems that way. The people who have a plan, whether it's they want to work on their garden or they want to do art or they want to get a part-time job or they want to travel the world or something like that, if they can afford it, that makes a huge difference. So I do think that there is a shock to the system when you retire, and the idea of doing nothing may be appealing for 3 months or 6 months. But after that, again, the day-to-day monotony of life becomes horrible. And all you're doing is putting out fires. You're having to deal with the broken toilet. You're having to deal with shopping. You're having to deal with cleaning all the time. And so I think the question that you have to ask yourself, and the question of all potential retirees have to ask, is what kind of thing do they think they will enjoy that will occupy their mind and their body, their spirit, their soul? What can they do to put love into, or get affirmation back, or get out of the house? And we spend 65, I guess, you know, we'll spend 50 years working, 50, 55 years working if we retire at about 65. And suddenly not working, how do you measure yourself? How do you value yourself? A lot of people go back to school. We have seniors at UND, and I mean, I mean senior citizens, not undergraduates. And they love being back in school, and they love talking to the young people and learning new perspectives. I run the senior citizens discussion group every month at the East Grand Forks Library, and there are people there who are in 5 or 6 clubs. They're in gaming club, and there's one woman who's in a Shakespeare club and who also reads all the president's letters and stuff, as well as being in the philosophy discussion group that I run. And that's where she finds her meaning. She is more social now in her retirement. She's in her 80s. She's more social now than she ever was during the rest of her life. And this is the kind of thing that you need to make a plan for, because isolating yourself or vegetating takes away part of the essential aspect of what it means to be a human, which is to produce things, to contribute to the society, to have relations with other people. We are relational beings. We need interactions with other people. And when we lose that interaction, we often lose part of ourselves.
Didn't mean for this to drift into a discussion about retirement, but I think it really fits. And I'm going to extend that a little more, Jack, if we could. Just got back from Florida, Jack. Visited my brother, who lives in a place called The Villages. And if you Google it and ask the question, what's there to do in The Villages? The answer will be everything, all the time. 365 days a year from sunup to sundown, there are groups that talk about everything. There are activities like sports. You want to play stickball in an organized stickball group? Jack, you can do that in The Villages. You can play soccer. You can play softball. You can do all of those things. You can play. But for me, what I've wondered about, okay, is it going to be fun to play every day all the time? Is that going to be fulfilling enough for me when right now I get to visit with people like you and many other people across North Dakota about very significant topics? Is it going to be fulfilling for me? And again, will I need to work?
I don't think this is a question that you can ask universally. I don't think what's true of Craig is necessarily true of Jack or true of your brother or sister or what have you. My grandparents lived in The Villages in New Jersey, and my grandmother wrote for The Villages newsletter, and she loved that. And one of the reasons why she loved that was everyone knew her name and everyone read the column. And so she'd walk down the paths, because they have paths, not streets, right? And they walked down the paths and people said hello to her. And that was very important to her, because she was a teacher for about a year, but then she got married and became a homemaker. And she literally shared a bed with her sister every day until the day she got married, when she shared a bed with her husband. And she was about 90 when she passed away. And for someone like her, I don't necessarily think that having that diversity of experience is necessary for her health and wellness. What she wanted was a community. What she wanted was affirmation. What she wanted was a task that she could focus on to engage her mind. But someone like you, who has had this diverse experience, who's talked to people all over the world, who every day is on the radio and exploring new topics and challenging your mind and translating the experience to listeners, you're going to have different needs. And so what a philosopher wants to do is say something universal, like all human beings need to seek meaning, or all human beings need to find activities that give them a purpose. And then it becomes an individual question about personality and about character. And that's why it's so important to know yourself. It's so important to have gone through the process of questioning who you are, questioning your own values, and really asking yourself, what makes me happy? What makes me feel good? What helps me get up in the morning? Because as we all know, when you have nothing to do, that getting out of bed process can be very, very difficult if you have nothing to look forward to. And for some people, that may just be gardening for an hour a day. But for other people, that may be 8 hours in an art studio, or volunteering with other folks who need help, or going back and being a teacher and teaching students your career, or things like that. It varies from person to person. And so I think for the 5 or 10 years preceding retirement, what people really have to do is go through the experience of self-exploration, try things as much as they can, experiment, talk to their friends, talk to their spouses, talk to their doctors, and figure out who they are to get a sense of what kind of plan they want to put in place.
All right. I'm going to bend this back to folks like us who are really still working and want to continue working and not worry about retirement, even though you're exactly right. It's something that we should think about. And I really like your advice to try new things, even though we're older. It's okay to do that. But Jack, I wondered this. I wonder about automation and artificial intelligence and all of those things impacting industries like farming and manufacturing. I've watched it on the dairy farms in Wisconsin that my son serves in his job. What should we be concerned about as some of these traditional jobs disappear, yet we want to still have value for someone? How can we get through these trends, these changes, these updates, I guess, to how things are done?
I saw this meme on the internet where, or I think it was a tweet or something, I don't know, where somebody said, I want AI to do my job so that I can create art, as opposed to AI creating art so I can do my job. And I think that that's a really wonderful summary of where we are right now and what we ought to do to direct these new technologies. If what we're doing is using AI to take away our hobbies and our fun and our creativity, then all we have is work. But if what we have AIs that make our jobs easier and more efficient, then it opens the door for us to explore all the other avenues of the human experience. You know, combines can be operated by GPS now. And you can sit in your combine and look at your phone while the combine is steering. And for some people, that's okay. For some people, that's not. What you consider a hard day's work and a valuable day's work varies from person to person. But technology has always changed the nature of work and has always changed the nature of our day-to-day life. And human beings have always adjusted. 100 years ago, they were predicting that we would have 20-hour work weeks. 100 years ago, they were suggesting that in the future, human beings would have all this opportunity to explore the more creative side of life. And that hasn't happened, right? You know, in your lifetime, in our lifetime, I guess it was the 80s and 90s, they were talking about the paperless office, right? That the computers would, you'd write emails and you'd do all your reports and everything would be on the computer. But of course, there are no paperless offices, right? There's paper all over the place. And so I think that technology is going to change the way we do our work, but it's not going to take work away. It will, however, force us to find new ways to work with that technology. And maybe in 20 years, we're not going to see baristas at Starbucks anymore. Maybe 20 years, we're not going to have people help us at Target. But there will be things for people to do. If there aren't, then governments are going to have to find other ways to help people make a living. And they might even have to be concerned with things like universal basic income.
Did I hear you say Andrew Yang? Did I hear you, the presidential candidate who proposed exactly that, this concept of universal basic income? I think his idea was to give everybody $1,000 a month. And his idea was to help allow that to help people who begin to be displaced by these things.
Not quite 100 years ago, William James, a philosopher, wrote one of my favorite essays called The Moral Equivalent of War. And what he was doing was trying to create a way to inculcate the virtues into young people, courage, strength, intelligence, without having them to go kill one another on the battlefield. And he prescribed a national work corps where for a year, all young people would go and build bridges and repair roads and tend to forests and work in communities and do things like that to contribute to the society. And I think that something like a universal basic income or the efficiency that comes with technology can make room for something like that, for ways in which we can contribute to other communities, to the common good, to those in need. There are always going to be people in need. There are always going to be people who require tending to, whether medically or interpersonally. There's always going to be need for infrastructure. There's always going to be need to tend to forests. There's always going to be need to help fight against nature when it fights against us, right? We're always going to have wildfires more than we have now. And so how do we create a society where people are able to say, I want to contribute to the world, as opposed to just go into an office every day, push paper and get a paycheck and only cater to my family? For some people, that's fine. And for some people, that's enough. And there are lots of people who have jobs that don't give them meaning. What they're doing is they're working so they can come back to their family. What they're doing is they're working so they can, you know, coach Little League or something like that. And that's fine. You don't have to find meaning in your work. You just have to find meaning in your life. And with technology and with efficiency and with assistance from government planning, we can open up the possibilities in ways that we've never been able to realize before.
Where I wonder whether this might begin to become important is how when younger people begin to contribute to the workforce in ways that are very different than the way you and I matriculated through the workforce. Is that something that you see becoming more important for younger people as they become contributors to society and maybe think of what work is in a different way?
I think that's right. And I think that what we mean by contributing to society really has to be on the table, because art is incredibly important to us. Everyone who listens to this broadcast has decided what color their walls should be. There's that process, has decided to put a picture or a painting or a photograph on their walls. Everyone who listens to this broadcast decides what they were going to wear today, whether it's a suit or a sweatshirt with your favorite sports team. We constantly make artistic decisions about our lives, but we dismiss those as unimportant. We dismiss those as secondary to other kinds of productivity. We need people to make the world full and vibrant and whole and, again, meaningful. I keep using that word. And so certainly you can take the position that you have to do a solid day's work to contribute to society, but that work doesn't have to be harvesting sugar beets. That work doesn't have to be being in a coal mine. That work can be making the world a better place for other people. And there's another risk that I call it the I've got mine Jack fallacy. and what it is that sense that a lot of older people have, which is it was good enough for me, therefore it's good enough for them. I worked on the farm for 40 years, so I'm only going to give credit to people who worked that hard for their 40 years. I knew an administrator years ago who had a baby, and she used to say she didn't take maternity leave, so she doesn't understand why any of the other faculty want to take maternity leave. That's a horrible way of looking at the world, to think that your experience defines everyone else's experience. And so I think it behooves our generation in this period of major technological change to say, my experience isn't going to define the experience of the younger generations. What I have to do is listen instead of talk. What I have to do is negotiate and investigate and engage with the younger people to see what's meaningful to them, to see how I can influence the world in a positive way and not force my own unbending values on people who have a fundamental different experience. I mean, my daughter, I often talk about how during the pandemic, my daughter was incredibly social because all of her friends were online and she was always talking to someone. When she was doing her homework, FaceTime was in the background while all of her friends were doing her homework. If the pandemic had occurred when I was growing up as a kid, I would have gone crazy. I wouldn't have been able to talk to anyone or see anyone, and she was incredibly social. And that in itself is a profoundly different experience of what it means to grow up and what it means to have human relationships. And so the folks who say my mode of life is the only acceptable way of life, they're really hurting the next generation, and they're hurting themselves because they're closing themselves off to all of these interesting and exciting people who have new things to say.
We'll wrap things up here by sharing this with you, Jack. So I'm a computer software programmer. That's my degrees in computer science. I love piddling around with computers, et cetera, et cetera. And I write code from time to time, and I like to write it on my little Raspberry Pi computer. If people don't know what that is, it's like a $50 thing that's about the size of a deck of cards that can literally do almost everything that a desktop can do for most people. I can program in it. And so I find myself spending hours and hours working through somewhat complex problems. And now what I do when I finish is I tell ChatGPT to write it in seconds. A, it's better than what I did. And B, their stuff works and mine's always, but I enjoy fighting through the process of doing it myself, staying in my old ways. And my kids say, well, don't bother with that. Go do something else. And it's just like, no, I enjoy this. This is what I like to do, even though there is a better way to do it. I like the work.
Everyone gets to decide for themselves what's meaningful. And what's important is that you put in an effort and you engage your mind and you engage your personality. And so for you, that coding is painting a picture or having a stamp collection or tending to a garden or baking a cake for your household or doing any other things. It isn't important what you do. It's important that you do something. I hope you're not harming the world. I hope you're contributing to other people's wellness as well as your own, and you're being healthy and self-reflective and all of these sorts of things that are also essential to human flourishing. But what makes the human experience is that we get to choose. We get to choose for ourselves what is valuable. There are very few things that are inherently valuable. There are very few things that are goods in themselves. So we get to decide what we impart with this value and what is worth our time. And if that's programming for you, that's fine. If that's reading for someone else, that's fine. If that's knitting or quilting or whatever, that's fine. What's wonderful about a free society, what's wonderful about being in a place where we get to make decisions for our own lives is that we get to choose, and then we get to pursue the life that we want as much as possible. And hopefully with technology and with good governance, we can give everyone that opportunity instead of denying that opportunity to the poor, to the marginalized, to the ill, to the disabled, to people who don't get that opportunity to choose. How can we give everyone the chance to choose? How can we tend to everyone's needs? Technology can help us do that.
My guest has been Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein. He joins me each and every month here on Main Street for a segment we call Philosophical Currents. Jack's a distinguished professor of philosophy and ethics at the University of North Dakota. Always a pleasure, Jack.
Oh, it's always so much fun. Thanks. A body like Arnold with a Denzel face. He's smart like a doctor with a real good rep. And when he comes home, he's relaxed with pep.
Still ahead on Main Street, Mike Fralick joins Rick Guillon and me for another edition of Prairie Plates. Mike's the co-owner, founder, and head of brewery operations at Laughing Sun Brewing in Bismarck, and his team recently won the 2025 Downtown Bismarck Burger Slam. What were his secrets? That's after this.
I like bagels. Have some salad. All I
eat is pizza. Eat some barbecue.
Applesauce and some nice red beets.
There's the music we look forward to each and every Wednesday. Of course, that means it's time for Prairie Plates with Rick Guillon. Rick, welcome back to Main Street.
It's good to be back with you, Craig. How are you doing?
I am doing just fine, enjoying this warmth that we have, and I'll take claim for it. I brought it back from the South when I came back to North Dakota. Rick, we have a guest in the Main Street studio, Mike Fralick. He is the founder and co-owner of Laughing Sun Brewing in Bismarck. Mike, welcome to Main Street.
Thanks for having me.
Now, is the trophy that you won so large you couldn't bring it with you today for winning the 2025 Downtown Bismarck Burger Slam? But congratulations about that.
The trophy is actually a championship belt.
That's right.
Wear it around your waist. So it's sitting in our tap room right now behind the bar. But kudos to our staff for doing an awesome job on the burger.
Now, this was a jalapeno-laced brisket burger?
Yes, it was. We did it for a special for the Downtown Burger Slam in January, but it was a garlic toasted bun with smoked Cajun cream cheese, had a brisket burger patty, so beef with brisket, 20% of the brisket ground into it, then a melted provolone. The patty was smoked. Melted provolone, then we did candied bacon and candied jalapenos on top of that, kind of inspired by our jalapeno poppers that we do for our special events and stuff that we do here on our catering side.
So what do you think made it stand out from everyone else?
Just super quality burger. I mean, the smokiness, but the candied bacon and candied jalapenos just it give a little bit of that sweetness, but just a little spice in there to offset that, the cheese on there. It was fabulous. Just really great burger.
If I asked the general person in Bismarck, is Laughing Sun Brewing better known for its food or for its beer that you are in charge of? What wins the day there?
I think we're probably going to get known for our barbecue and our live music venue before we get recognized as a brewery. We've been a brewery for 12 plus years now, but we've really become a restaurant destination with our barbecue restaurant, and our catering side has really reached a ton of people that we wouldn't have reached before without our catering thing. So we've always been a live music venue. We've got 200 seats now versus 65 downtown. So we've got a lot more space for live music and people to come and enjoy that. So I feel like we're a brewery third.
There were 9 competitors in this burger competition. What was it like to be a top competitor in this competition this year? This is the second annual one, I believe.
Yeah, this year they did it in January. So it was really great because, I mean, we sold well over 500 burgers, and that really picks up in January. You know, in North Dakota, you've got a slower month of January and February, usually the worst times of the year here as a bar restaurant business. So it was great to be a part of that competition and bringing people out in January that maybe wouldn't have come out otherwise. And it's always great to, I don't necessarily view our other restaurants in this area as competition. It's always great to get together with a lot of these people. I know a lot of the owners around of a lot of restaurants around the town. So it's always great to just get together, have a little friendly competition and do some fun things for the the people at Bismarck in January.
That sounds like a lot of fun. And what does this competition mean to Bismarck Mandan?
I think it's just a way to celebrate our local things that we've got going on here and really like try to boost, like I said, that January timeframe. This year, they really did a great job on the timing of the event. Last year was in September, but I think it's just a way to showcase a lot of great stuff that's going on in Bismarck and Mandan area. Yeah, a lot of great people doing great stuff, including our staff. They just knocked it out of the park.
We talked a little bit earlier about some of the barbecue options at Laughing Sun. Can you talk a little bit about that? You have brisket, ribs, pulled pork, a lot of different things.
Yeah, we do brisket, ribs, pulled pork. My favorite is the smoked turkey on our menu. It was amazing. We smoke our wings, so we've got chicken wings on there. But coming up, even for starting March 3rd and going into April, at the end of April, we're doing shrimp tacos. And we've done this for the last couple years. Back by popular demand, our shrimp tacos are amazing. And so that's a fun thing coming up for us in March here that we're really looking forward to.
Talk a little bit about some of the varieties of beer you have. I've had a lot of Feast Like a Sultan and Sinister Pear at Lake Chida or Heart Butte in the summertime. And just talk a little bit about your products you brew.
Well, we do things from light to dark, hoppy to malty. So we've got usually 18 beers on tap at any given time. We have a cider on tap, and then we also have root beer on tap. But those offerings include a golden ale, a light Mexican lager. We do like 3 or 4 IPAs, Feast Like a Sultan, Dropping Cones, or double IPA. We do a number of different sours. We have a Red Dwarf raspberry sour that's always regular on the menu. And we have a Space Probe series sour. It's a Berliner Weiss series that we have blueberry on right now, but that changes from pina colada to orange dreamsicle to rocket pop to all sorts of different fun flavors on the sour side. And then we do a lot of darker style beers. Lignite is an imperial stout that's a regular for us. Flying Axe Irish style red won the bronze medal in 2021 at the Great American Beer Festival in Denver. We try to offer a bunch of different flair. The latest dark ones coming out is a Mooncat cold coffee ale. We've got a Naughty Goat German style Bock that's become a regular. So from anything that you're looking for, light to dark, hoppy to malty, we're going to have something for you.
Craig, it sounds like we should take the show on the road and make a visit to Laughing Sun.
I'll take that anytime. I'm curious, though, Mike, when you start brewing a beer from start to finish, does it take a different amount of time depending on what you're brewing? You walk by these breweries that you see around, and I always wonder, was this yesterday or is this like now a month happening for me here? I guess I just don't know. Walk me through the process of brewing your own beer.
Yeah, depending on the style of beer that we're brewing, we do a number of different lagers now, the Mexican lager, the Bock. We do an amber style lager, which is sort of like a Martzen style called Otto's lager. Those will take a little bit longer, up to that 3 to 4 week range. Our Sinister Belgian Golden Strong Ale is a little bit longer at about 3 weeks fermentation. But we can turn around some of these light golden ales in a week and a half. IPAs usually around, I would say, 2.5 weeks, depending on the dry hop time. So I guess I would estimate our average batch probably being around that 2.5 week to 3 week time frame. But that can vary a little bit, depends on whether you're making a lager or you're making an ale, and then how strong that beer is. If it's got a lot of alcohol in it, it's going to take a little bit longer for that yeast to fully ferment out, versus some of our 4% beers that yeast can really crush through some sugar.
Is it a recipe thing or is it just a taste thing that lets you know this is ready to go?
It's all about the yeast. So we're monitoring yeast fermentation activity. We're taking gravity readings to see like how much sugar that they've eaten, and they get to a point where you get to a terminal gravity. So we are yeast wranglers. The yeast are really doing all the work on our side of the brewery. We just have to set them up for success to give them the right environment, do our things right on our side so that we're giving them the best opportunity. And then from after the fermentation, it's all about quality control and oxygen levels and things like that. So we're constantly have quality control steps in our process to just really make sure the final product is going to be the best that you can have. So,
Rick, I want to be the quality control expert for these guys. So hook me up, would you?
I'll be your deputy.
One question I have, Rick, then I'll get it back to you here, is I just came back from Florida. And my brother lives in a place where he can go to several different places and see live music every night. And what struck me there was the variety of acts that were available. In Bismarck, is it tough for you to book live music, or is that an easy thing to do? And how do you go about that?
From the beginning, we've always been a live music venue. So when we opened, we had a ton of musician friends that just needed a place to play. They needed more venues. And so for us, it's always been a focus. We've had live music 3 to 4 nights a week for 12 plus years. So for us, now it's a lot easier. We get a lot of requests from touring people coming through looking for a date here. We've got a ton of local options that have, we become known as a venue. So we get a lot of people reaching out to us. There's a regular kind of, we've got a regular lineup of local bands that filter through once every few months that you're going to see here. But we're always trying to bring something new, whether we've got hip hop shows, we've done like EMO music, we've done heavier shows, we've done country shows, just your classic rock, whatever, folk, funk. We do it all because there's someone out there looking for something here. And we try to be a venue that can cross all genres depending on the day. So just know that it's probably going to be great when you get here. Just depending on what kind of music you like, you're going to have to check out our social media, our website for events, and then kind of time it out that way. Most of our shows are free. We do have some ticketed shows every now and then. And a couple years ago, we started branching off into some bigger shows, parking lot shows. We closed off the street for a Yellow Wolf show for 1,500, but we're starting to look at that 700-800 people in an outdoor place and working on a venue here coming up in maybe an indoor venue that we'll have here in a few years. So
I've been at a few shows, one in particular, the Lost Horses. I always go to that when I'm in Bismarck and I see that Shad's playing, and that's a lot of fun.
Those guys are great. Chad's a great guy, and he's a friend, and the rest of the band is friend too, but those guys do great stuff. He's a cowboy poet and a bunch of original cowboy music from an old rodeo guy.
Do you have any shows coming up that you want to highlight?
Yeah, we've got Green Boots coming up this weekend. We have Denver Vannoy and Jay Gavin. We've got Green Boots and Waste and Tape. It's going to be a little more heavy show. Ben Suki plays here a few times. We've got a little big band that plays usually on the last Monday of every month. So this year it's a Fat Tuesday kind of deal. So they'll do that at the end here coming up. Of Avantide is going to be here, another local band coming up. Looks like we've got just a few. We do some like Tuesday and Thursday night shows tend to be a little more like singer-songwriter kind of things, a little more low-key than that Friday and Saturday comes out, and we get a little bit more full band kind of ideas happening there. St. Patty's Day. That weekend, we're going to have The Rule is going to be here. The Zane Miller Trio will be here, a jazz trio on Friday the 14th, and on the 15th, The Rule will be here. On that Sunday the 16th is a paint and sip, so we'll have a painting party. There's something usually going on all day long. We don't have anything on Monday, St. Patrick's Day, but Brianna Helbing will be here next weekend. Overeducated, Nerve, Impulse, Shoshana and the band. Just all sorts of different local people coming through. But we just did some ticketed shows for some EMO music. And, you know, they put up a whole LED wall and come and do some kind of more electronic DJ kind of stuff. And we've had some really great turnouts for that. So apparently there is a scene for that that's maybe not getting any other play anywhere else. And so we're kind of happy to be a place where you might not see the things that you see everywhere else. And we try to accommodate all sorts of different
things. Hey, Mike, we need to add TV star now to your resume here. You had a chance to be on Travels with Darley. That's Darley Newman's show on PBS. They came to visit you. What was that like?
It was great. Darley had a great time. We sat and we drank beer and we ate barbecue and threw some axes. She got to know us a little bit. We got to know her. It was a really good time. It was just, it was a fun summer day. and happy to be a spot for her to come and stop by.
Do we have the R&D team now fully engaged, figuring out what kind of burger you're going to create next year to defend your title, Mike?
Well, they are working on that. They're working on some summer ideas. Our R&D team is really on the brewery side, is focusing on other hard beverages, hard soda, some hard spiked beverages that maybe aren't beer. So look for that coming up on our side, is branching out into things that maybe you don't think of as a regular beer thing, but there will be a flavored malt beverage.
Hey, Rick, you and I had discussed a couple weeks ago about non-alcoholic options maybe becoming a little bit more popular. Is that something that you think about, Mike, at Laughing Sun Brewing?
Absolutely. We sell Athletic Brewing Company's non-alcoholic stuff. We have a non-alcoholic cider from Two Town Cider that we sell in a tap room. We've looked at creating our own stuff. I don't have a pasteurizer, so we looked at just the investment in that is a little difficult. So unless we're like acid dosing something back, we haven't been able to do that just for the cost of making non-alcoholic stuff. All the good things that you want. We've looked at, you know, gluten-free options and all these different options, possibilities, but we just run into a little bit of constraints on what we can do with our equipment that we currently have and what that allows us to do and have the best quality control. So non-alcoholic side, like I said, we do offer some options. We don't currently make any of those ourselves.
Mike, just to finish up here, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Bismarck restaurant scene, and you're a food enthusiast like me and a Bismarck Mandan enthusiast. We talked a little bit off air about Fogo Gaucho and Joe Mo House opening recently in Bismarck. Talk a little bit about the food scene in Bismarck these days.
Yeah, it's a lot different than it used to be. I mean, we've got a lot more different options than, say, 10 years ago we have here. I mean, the Mexican food scene is outstanding now. The Brazilian grills is going to be great. I haven't been there yet myself, but I've heard very good things about it. We've got local restaurants downtown, a lot of local flair that's really doing some awesome food stuff, Butterhorn, Anima Cucina, things like that, that they're nominated on the James Beard Foundation's website as well for doing great stuff. And so
Huckleberry point, too.
Huckleberry House. Yeah. Yep. I mean, there's all sorts of things that are happening here as far as, yeah, just more eclectic kind of things, more ethnic options, more out of the just your main kind of Applebee, nothing against Applebee's, ground round, things like that. But you got your just regular American flair burgers and sandwiches, and we have a bunch of those options. But now we're really getting into a lot of little more gourmet stuff, whether you want to say, yeah, Korean corn dogs, or you want a Brazilian grill, or you want to have just some fantastic German food. We've got Das Mountain food truck that's running around doing some great stuff here. So there's a lot more options than there used to be, and it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's really exciting.
Mike Fralick has been our guest here on Prairie Plates. He's the co-founder and head of brewery operations. Throw that in the best job on the planet book, if you would, Rick, for me. That's at Laughing Sun Brewing in Bismarck. Mike, thanks for joining us on Prairie Plates.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
And Rick, yeah, it's always great to visit with you.
We'll talk next week, Craig.
We'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting art programming here on Prairie Public.
This is Bird Note. Hear those chicks calling? They're nestlings at a great blue heron colony. During the winter and early spring, herons make their nests out of sticks and twigs high in the treetops. The male heron delivers the supplies, stick by stick, to the nest, as the female arranges things. First, she wedges a strong stick near the main branch of a large fir, spruce, or cottonwood tree to make the core of the nest support. Then she adds other sturdy sticks and branches, delivered by her partner. And finally, she weaves more flexible twigs around the base to lock things in place safely for her young. After she lays her eggs, she and her partner take turns incubating the eggs for 28 days. By the time they're 6 or 7 weeks old, the young begin to test the limits of their nest. If they survive predators like eagles, hawks, or crows, they'll grow to full adult size after 60 days or so. Their wingspan will be up to 6 feet. Ah, music to the heron parents' ears. Healthy, growing fledglings ready to take off. These parents built the perfect childhood home for their young without blueprints, architects, or engineers. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann. BirdNote gives you the sounds of birds every day, and you get the sights as well when you follow us on Instagram at BirdNote Radio.
This is Sarah Vogel. I live in Bismarck, and I'm an author of The Farmer's Lawyer, The North Dakota Nine, and The Fight for the Family Farm, and a former Agriculture Commissioner of North Dakota, and an attorney, and an advocate. I started listening to public radio as soon as I returned to North Dakota, and it was a godsend. There was classical music, there was news, it was accurate. And ever since then, I've had my radio permanently tuned to Prairie Public. In my car, in my house, it's my only station. The shows I love the most are Dave Thompson's News. He doesn't sleep. And the weekly news wrap-up where they bring together editors and publishers of North Dakota newspapers. I became a member because I listen to it all the time and I don't ever want it to go away.
Support the programs you love by becoming a sustaining member of Prairie Public. It's easy. Just go to prairiepublic.org and open the link that says donate.
This is Dakota Datebook for February 26th. It's basketball tournament time. For over 100 years, basketball has been a cornerstone of North Dakota's sports scene, uniting players, fans, and entire towns in the pursuit of victory. Join us as we celebrate the history of basketball in the region through Dakota Datebook. Basketball was invented by James Naismith in 1891. Created as an indoor activity for the winter, the game upheld the humanics philosophy of Springfield College in Massachusetts, where Naismith had graduated and was teaching. This philosophy focused on educating students in spirit, mind, and body for leadership in service to others. The game spread quickly across the country, and by August of 1900, just 9 years after its invention, the city of Bismarck already had a girls' basketball team. In 1904, the University of North Dakota in Grand Forks published its first annual, listing only a women's basketball team. At the Agricultural College in Fargo, now NDSU, a women's team was formed in 1898, with the men's team following later. By 1908, both teams at NDSU were well established, frequently traveling or hosting other teams for competitive matches. These teams included local city teams, high school teams, and other colleges. In 1911, the Fargo Forum reported on the rapid growth of the sport. In former years, basketball was called a mollycoddle game by the gridiron heroes at the colleges. Yet very few football players have made good at this game. It's an indoor game, and when played by two first-class teams, it's even more exciting than football. Soon, all gymnasiums, big and small, will resound with cheers from basketball fans. And let it be known, this sport is played from Florida to Alaska. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Sarah Walker. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Dakota Geriatrics presents Age-Friendly Healthcare for American Indian Elders Virtual Symposium, February 28th from 7:45 a.m. to 1 p.m. for healthcare providers and community workers working with American Indian populations. Learn more at dakotageriatrics.org.
Republican Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri is calling out tech companies even as they try to align themselves with President Donald Trump. My conversation with the senator on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
I'm Ira Flatow. On Science Friday, we wonder about the secrets of nature and meet the scientists finding the keys to the universe, like black hole maven Jan 11.
I think it's really important as a scientist not to put a belief system first. The whole point is to explore the unknown.
Come explore with us. It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Science Friday. Listen every Friday evening at 7 Central, 6 Mountain on Prairie Public.
And that's a wrap for today's Main Street. We are deeply grateful that you've spent time with us. Tomorrow on the show, we'll visit with Dr. Beth Carlson, a veterinarian, because we want to learn more about bird flu. The ongoing H5N1 bird flu outbreak has led to the culling of over 166 million birds in the United States, including chickens and turkeys, and has recently spread to dairy cows. What should we in North Dakota know? That's coming up tomorrow on Main Street, and we hope you'll join us.